Welcome to Community Matters. I'm Akeegan Boyce. In an era of streaming and AI and algorithmic discovery, sometimes we forget that there are humans behind the music. Music is one of the most human things that we do, after all. On Community Matters, we chat with artists who share their stories through the lens of their music communities, the people that have been there alongside their journeys. We hope it's a reminder of just how important people are to the music that we love. Today I'm speaking with Dagny, a pop artist from Tromsø, Norway.
Hi.
Hey, Dagny, how are you?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you too. I was going to put the video on, but I'm just right in the middle of like literally cleaning my house because we have a national day in like Norway in 2 days. So I'm totally in my like cleaning outfit, which is not very flattering. So
that's okay. I'm in the midst of, you know, like 2 months of quarantine. So I haven't actually worn real clothes in a while.
So you can relate.
I can relate. Dagny is a pop artist from Tromsø, Norway. She comes from a musical family and began her career in the folk tradition. And then in 2015, she surprised the industry with the breakout pop single called Backbeat, which catapulted her into stardom. Today, her songs have racked up over 450 million streams worldwide. She's made Billboard's Top 10 Pop Artist to Watch list. She's been nominated for Songwriter of the Year at Norway's version of the Grammys, and she's worked with a number of industry luminaries. 2019 was an especially big year when Steve Aoki produced her single Hit Your Heart, and her track Love You Like That was used as inspiration by Katy Perry for her hit Never Really Over, which has nearly 400 million streams on its own, all validating Dagny's skill as a songwriter. When we spoke a few weeks ago, she was a couple days from releasing the first half of her debut LP, Strangers Lovers. We talked about how she got here, her remarkable transition from folk singer to pop star, and about all the communities that supported her along the way.
As a kid, you dream of all the things that feels a bit far from your world. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a ballerina and a football keeper and an astronaut and an archaeologist. And because music was so, it was just there all the time, I didn't really even consider, I think, for a second that, oh yeah, music, that's probably what I should be doing. My parents, they are jazz musicians and they play jazz and bossa nova, which is probably on the very other side of the spectrum from what I do, which is like super energetic pop music. So I think what I learned from them mostly was just getting exposed to so much different kind of music, and also seeing them working as musicians made me realize pretty early that, you know, it's definitely not a glamorous, easy job. And my parents are not like the pushy types at all. So they really just let us do our own thing. And they never really pushed music on us in any way. So I actually, I guess, discovered music for myself. I love music, but I did never really like sang or play the guitar or did anything like that. I guess it was as late as 16, I think. That's when I, for several reasons, but one of them being actually this video of Eva Cassidy. It was on the television and she was like playing the acoustic guitar and singing just beautifully. And I think it was in a small bar in Brooklyn or somewhere. I was just very mesmerized by it. That Christmas, I got like two of her CDs from my parents. I think it was just shortly after that that I started picking up the guitar and started writing a little bit. I think the writing was more important than the singing part. It was more about making songs. And my dad would teach new little chords on the guitar and I would go up and write a song and come down and play it to them. So that was kind of how it started, I guess.
Cool. And then what happened next? I mean, how did you get from writing songs, learning some instruments to getting out the door and getting that music in front of people? What happened?
I was in school and at that time I probably had like just about started, you know, writing, and I could probably play like four chords on the guitar, which is actually not that many more chords than fewer chords than I know today.
That's all you need.
I'm not,
four.
Yeah, I'm not a great instrumentalist, but I knew those four chords, and we had this composition project in school, and I had to write a song and perform it in front of class on a Friday. And like, it was like a team building, like team work assignment. You know, we were three people who was meant to write one together and perform it, but they just never showed up for class. So I ended up having like to write it and perform it on my own. Huh. And the teacher, he just kind of picked up on something, I guess. And he started suggesting that, you know, some artist would come to town and he'll be like, yeah, Dagny, you should be a support act for them. And he would like get me these gigs around town. Cool. Just, yeah, he was awesome. And he's been at pretty much every show that I've played in my hometown since then. He's super cool. And then I just started like playing a bit of shows around town, and I really didn't think that much more of it. Probably I just really enjoyed it. But then, you know, I started school, high school, and did a music course there. And then I started writing more and becoming more serious about that. And then around 2012, I moved to London. Which was also just one of those random things. It was just like sticking my finger up in the air and just being like, so what way did the wind blow? Yeah. And then, okay, London, fine, let's go there. And I just started kind of seeing Guy there a little bit. And it was all just a lot of kind of small coincidences that happened at the same time. And it led me to London. And that's, I guess, when I started taking it more seriously. It just started becoming part of my everyday life, you know, writing every day and playing shows around London. I think people sometimes think, yeah, you were a struggling musician, that must have been really hard work. And it's like, no, that was actually a really nice part of it. That was a really good few years of this journey, because it just did so much to us and we grew so much, and also we got experience, but we also met so many people and we got to play tiny bars and big shows and living rooms. I mean, we probably played on a mountain somewhere. Like, we've done all of those things, and that was kind of maybe the biggest way for us to just get out there and get to be part of some kind of community, I guess.
This look into the reality of a musician's life is really important. The path to stardom isn't exactly paved in gold, just waiting to be taken, and the path to a reasonable paycheck isn't even clear. And most artists spend years trying to figure it out, building community, hoping that all the hard work pays off. And throughout Dagny's time in this phase, she learned a lot about her identity as an artist, which led to a pretty significant adjustment.
You know, around this time, this whole Hey Soul Sister song came around, and everyone was playing the ukulele. So I was playing the ukulele at one point, and I did that for many, many years, up until 2015 or something. But then I realized that it wasn't really going anywhere. And even though I really enjoy the music, it just didn't really seem to kind of connect. I'm a pretty energetic person. So standing on stage with an acoustic guitar and singing really mellow songs just didn't feel like me. So I met this guy from Portsmouth, and he was this kind of old, you know, a little bit rock and roll. And he played in a band, and he was like loud and had the cigarette like hanging a little bit like out of his mouth, like in a cool way. It was all about drums and like playing loud guitar and stuff. And we started experimenting with that. And that's when we ended up writing Backbeat, which then 6 months later ended up being my first single that kind of kicked everything off.
How did that feel when all of a sudden, like, you've been putting all this work in and then you put out something new and then all of a sudden everybody wants to connect with you?
It was kind of surreal, I guess. Norway, I hadn't really done anything in Norway, and suddenly it was all over the radio in Norway, and people would just be like, where did this come from? They just thought it happened overnight. And I remember to us that was really strange, because we've been gigging so much. We had been touring and gigging. We just hadn't been releasing anything. And suddenly after Backbeat, we were just flown out to New York and Los Angeles, and, you know, record labels on the phone and on the email all the time. So it was definitely like a turn overnight, but we'd been working for years up until that point. When you suddenly get exposed to that kind of attention around your music, people starting to have not just expectations, but also an idea of who you are as an artist. And as I said, like at the time where I was still very much figuring that out, after I got signed, I'd be sent around to like, you know, Los Angeles to write music with lots of great, massive producers. I definitely have the imposter syndrome, is that what it's called? Yeah, I already have that. So you can only imagine me in a room in Los Angeles with like these high-end producers and still trying to figure out exactly what I sounded like. People starting to have an idea of who you are as an artist. You know, I guess they're making up ideas of what it should be. I've always taken my time, I guess, to kind of find that and to really try and keep writing and stuff until it feels right. So we didn't rush out like a record, or we didn't rush out lots of music. We kind of took our time for each release, which I'm happy about.
If you were to choose, you know, perhaps this is a difficult question to answer, but if you were to choose between what happened and say, like, you know, one of the folkier singer-songwriter pieces that you were writing back then, would you have preferred that had blown up in a similar way to Backbeat? Because that kind of changed the entire trajectory of the types of songs you were writing. Are you happy about that, or would you rather still be writing those other songs?
No, I think sometimes I'm sad that we didn't just make a record when I first came to London, just so I could just have it for myself and be able to listen back to all of that. Because actually, when I made this record that I'm releasing now, I did go through pretty much every song that I've written since 2012. And some of the older stuff, you know, listening to it now, it just made me feel really like warm. And you could have said back then that, yeah, but this isn't a hit or whatever. But there was an emotion there. There was something really nice about that time and those songs. There was no pressure of like trying to write certain types of songs. It was just whatever we wanted to do, we did. I really try and not become like, you know, just a 9-to-5 writer who just tried to like, oh, let's just make a song and then we've done our work today. And then, not that I would ever say that, it doesn't matter, but I try and not get too affected on what's happening around in the industry or what kind of sound people are expecting or what kind of music is working right now or all of these things. Yeah, try and remember the 16-year-old self who's just sitting on the bed with the acoustic guitar trying to say something, you know. Yeah, I know it might not be the best time to release an album, I guess, like seeing that pretty much our entire year of gigs have been cancelled and, you know, I can't really do, or you could do promo online, but it's kind of hard to move around and do promo and stuff. But first of all, I guess now in these corona times, like people need or want music more than ever, you know, like we look at Netflix and we listen to music, and that's kind of something that, you know, it's a little light for a lot of people and you know, sitting at home week after week. And so I just, this first half of the record is quite light and joyful. And I just felt like I can almost see people in their living room just dancing around, listening to the songs and enjoying that. But mostly it was, you know, I had already set my mind to releasing the record this May, and I've been waiting for so long to do that. And there was never even a thought that I might put it off or wait. I just think, what are we waiting for? There's always Corona is obviously a very unique situation, but there could always be a reason to wait. Like, oh, I could just write one more song, or I could just tweak a little bit on that sound, or maybe if we wait to then, we can do that. And it's just, I've done that for too many years. And so once my mind was set on it, it was just super set on it.
I think you're right. I think people need music more than ever right now. So
yeah,
to give them some, you know, something new, especially the people who are really connected with your music. That's a piece of joy that you're providing. Yes, them. Yeah. The anticipation of looking forward to it and then actually hearing it, you know, going and dancing in their living room to it.
Yeah. And my fans and my listeners, they've been so patient. I'm surprised that there's even anyone still waiting for that record. I find news articles back to like, you know, almost a decade ago where I say like, oh yeah, the debut album is just around the corner. Which I'm like, oh, reading them now, it just makes me like, oh my God, yeah. I can't believe I put all that pressure on myself, I guess. When I wrote this album, Strangers and Lovers, you know, there's a side A and a side B, and the side A is when you're at the start or when you're in a relationship, and the other half is when you're out of that relationship. And I guess that's something that I've been spending a lot of time on, like in the last few years, thinking about. And I just find it weird how you might be in a relationship together and suddenly you are the most important thing to each other and you're the closest, you're closer to that person than anyone else. And then when you potentially split up, suddenly you go back to kind of being strangers sometimes again, where suddenly you can't call them anymore, or suddenly you see that they're hanging out with someone that you don't know, or they're kind of living their own life that you don't know anything about. And this whole like going from strangers into lovers and back to strangers again, that's something that I guess was very reflected in my music over the last few years. And so I guess I just decided to kind of dedicate the album to that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, it makes
you.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought to have. You know, how many people are out there just waiting for us to collide into them?
Yeah,
and create this, you know, very meaningful relationship for whatever period of time.
Exactly, and sometimes you can even go back, like whether it's your friends or whether it's like a girlfriend or a boyfriend. It's you can go back and be like, back to when you met them, and maybe at the time you didn't know that, as I said, like 5 years later, here you are down in Spain on holiday, and yeah, you know, you're hanging out and you know everything. It's weird how, you know, as you say, there's all these people out there, and suddenly you collide into someone and they become very meaningful to you, like,
yeah,
big part of your life. I definitely write songs about human relationships. Sometimes I think maybe I should have tried to say something political or comment on what's happening with our nature and the climate and everything. That's stuff that I care about, but somehow it just doesn't seem to kind of come out in my music for some reason. For me, like when I hear a song or I write a song, I very quickly know whether this feels like a song that is for me and whether it's a song that makes me feel something. In the same way that when I listen to other people's music, sometimes it's not even just about what the lyric says, or it's just about an emotion. Always wanted to take me to, and how there's so much we should see. I try and always keep the focus on the music, and I try not to influence them too much. For example, when I make a record, I want to tell them about the record, but I don't want to tell them specifically about my personal private stories necessarily behind each song, because I want them to make their own, you know, memories to those songs, their own interpretations. I think I'm aware that, you know, even though I'm personal with my fans, I don't overshare, because I just think that can get in the way of what's the important bit, which is the music.
Take up too much of your time.
No, it's really nice, and I chat so much, so that hour just flew by. Very nice to talk to you.
Very nice speaking with you as well. I wish you only the best. Feel free to stay in touch.
Definitely. And whenever we come back to play, you should come to a show.
For sure. Let's make that happen. Thank Dagny for her time and the honest lens into a journey that's taken her from a composition project in Tromsø, Norway, to globally renowned pop star, and for her humility and candid acknowledgement of all the people and communities that helped her get here. All of the music you heard on this episode, outside of my instrumental in the intro and outro, is hers and used with her permission. Community Matters is a production of Grey Matter. Grey Matter is a community platform with new ways to discover music, express yourself, and support creators. Our mission is to build a more sustainable music ecosystem for everyone. For more info, you can follow the link in the show's description. You can also sign up to be a beta user or follow us on Instagram or Twitter. And tune back in a couple weeks for another round of Community Matters. Thanks for being here.